Our reflective words are from Lu Cheng, who died in 217, and Qin Shi Dao, who lived from 1053 to 1102. The first from Lu Cheng is called Poem Without a Category. I think this one's really funny. Okay, again, he died in 217. Office work, a wearisome jungle. Ink drafts, a crosshatch of deletions and smears. Racing the writing brush, no time to eat. Sun slanting down, but never a break. Swamped and muddled in records and reports. Head spinning till it's useless and numb. I leave off and go west of the wall. Climb the height and let my eyes roam. Square embankments hold back the clear water. Wild ducks and geese at rest in the middle. Where can I get a pair of colorful wings so I can join you to bob on the waves? I felt like that so many times. And this is Cold Night. A long time in one place, and I always think of moving. Then I run into the same trouble, and I'm sorry I made the change. I raise the wick of the cold lamp, but the flame is out. Break up what's left of the fire, but it's turned to ashes. Icy water drips a while and then stops. Windy blinds flap open and shut. I know well enough that writing should avoid too frequent sorrow, but thoughts come, and sorrow just somehow appears. Our talk today is on the UN's International Court of Justice. So my family's taking this big trip in 3 weeks, and we're going to the Netherlands. And I got the idea that we should go to The Hague, tour around, see what it's like there. And I found you can actually sit in on court hearings at the International Court if you're there in time in the morning. Turn in your passport and get checked and approved, and it's all first come, first serve. But if things work out right, then you can sit and hear some arguments on some of the cases before the court. So I thought that was really neat. We're going to do it. And I found I hardly knew anything about the UN Court of Justice, like really barely anything at all. So I'm going to tell you a little about it. But first I have an aside about Lotta Hitchlinova. I first met my husband, Matter. We were living in Japan, and I'm American. I didn't know much at all about Canada. Everything he told me was new to me. Like, I remember he told me about Tim Hortons. He told me about Terry Fox. He told me about curling. I didn't know what curling was. I never heard of curling. And he told me about this woman whose ads used to be on the radio, her announcements were on the radio when he was a child. And she had this accent and this wild name. She was Lotta Hitchlinova. And she would say that people were in trouble and they needed help. They needed financial support. Please, if you were able to, send a donation. And he could still remember the address, 56 Sparks Street, Ottawa 4. I'm sure many of you remember that. We were talking about it last week with Everett's cousin, and she remembered seeing Lotta on television, but Everett remembers her from the radio. This was a very big thing for people of this generation, to like a very persistent and memorable series of announcements. And Everett had never heard of Unitarians. She talked about the Unitarian Service Committee. That was this organization for financial support to people in other countries who were in need. And he didn't know what a Unitarian was. So we were talking about how Abbott and I in Nagoya, Japan, could never have imagined that we'd be living in Halifax going to the Unitarian Church when he was telling me about Lada Hishlanova. Last week, my family was in Ontario for my book tour. Yay, it's very, very fun, exciting. Thank you all for your kind words of support and congratulations. And we stopped in Ottawa. We visited Albert's cousin. We had coffee with her, Peggy. Some of you may remember at a UN Sunday a few years ago, my daughter Jane talked about Peggy. Peggy was, she used to be Canada's ambassador to the UN, and her specialty was nuclear disarmament. She still works in Ottawa. She has the Rideau Institute, which is a policy advisory organization. And her office is on Spark Street. So our family had coffee with Peggy, and we were talking about wanting to walk out Spark Street and see, make a pilgrimage to 56 Spark Street, Ottawa 4. And Peggy knew all about Lada Hishlanova. She said, oh, there's a plaque. So we walked up, and it's just across from Peggy's office, just right across the street. And sure enough, there's a plaque on the wall, and there's a relief sculpture of Lada Hishlanova, and it talks about the Unitarian Service Committee. And we took a photo standing in front of it. Peggy's office faces the Prime Minister's office. She's at the back of her building, and there's an alley or a laneway. And then right behind that is the building with the Prime Minister, and his office is on the side that her window looks down on. She's up on an upper floor. And she told us how a few years ago she was using hashtag Keep Steve during the last election. And after election day, she put a sign in her office window that said, Steve got heaved. And it was actually something that he would be able to see. So Peggy took great kind of impish pleasure in that. Lada Hishlanova was not ahead of her time, but of her time in supporting people who, in those years in Europe after World War II, were so in need. Refugees, people whose societies had been broken by the war, people who had endured so much trauma and damage and had no financial resources left. And her whole focus was on reaching out and helping people. And this is something that is consistent with everything the UN does. And the International Court of Justice is a part of that. It's about fairness, parity. It's about the inherent worth and dignity of every human being, our first UU principle. I'll read a little bit about the International Court of Justice in case you don't know much about it, as I didn't. The International Court of Justice is the principal judicial organ of the United Nations. It was established by the United Nations Charter in June of 1945. And the court began its activities in 1946. The seat of the court is at the Peace Palace in The Hague, Netherlands. Of the six principal organs of the United Nations, it is the only one not located in New York. The court is composed of 15 judges elected for a 9-year term by the General Assembly and the Security Council of the United Nations. It's independent of the United Nations Secretariat. It has its own international secretariat, whose activities are both judicial and diplomatic, as well as administrative. The official languages of the court are French and English. It's also known as the World Court. It is the only court of a universal character with general jurisdiction. And there's something so beautiful about the phrase World Court and the idea that we can all be bound and governed by one set of principles and one set of shared priorities. The International Court of Justice should not be confused with the other, mostly criminal, judicial institutions based in The Hague of Jason Aries. This got quite confusing for me, but it's useful to know. Such as the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia. That's an ad hoc court created by the Security Council. Or the International Criminal Court, the ICC, which is the first permanent international criminal court established by treaty, which does not belong to the United Nations system. Or the Special Tribunal for Lebanon, or any of several more. So you see that it's easy to confuse those organizations with one another. The court has a twofold role: to settle, in accordance with international law, legal disputes submitted to it by countries, and to give advisory opinions on legal questions referred to it. The first case in the general list of the court was Corfu Channel, United Kingdom versus Albania. That was submitted on May 22, 1947. Between then and July of this year, 177 cases have been entered on the general list. I'll read to you the names of some of those cases to give you an idea of the kinds of issues the court deals with. A lot of them are about waterways, alleged violations of sovereign rights and maritime spaces in the Caribbean Sea. That's Nicaragua versus Colombia. Maritime delimitation in the Indian Ocean. That is Somalia and Kenya. Dispute over the status and use of waters of the Salalah. Chile versus Bolivia. Then there's something, this goes way back. Arbitral award of October 1899, Guyana and Venezuela. Some of these will be unfamiliar to you and some will be more familiar. Alleged violations of the 1955 Treaty of Amity, Economic Relations and Consular Relations, the Islamic Republic of Iran and the United States of America. So there are so many different issues being handled, and it was a real revelation to me to think of these in terms of not being limited to one country, because usually we think of something going to the Supreme Court, and that's settled. That's the highest court. But these go even beyond that. I'm going to read you the names of the judges, and I want you to think about how these people cover the entire world. They're a real cross-section in a very wonderful way. The current president is Abdulkawi Ahmed Youssef from Somalia. He has been a member of the court since 2009 and has been president since last year, 2018. The current vice president is, I don't know how to pronounce this, Zhui Hongqing from China. She has been a member of the court since 2010 and has been vice president since 2018. And the other judges are Judge Peter Tomka from Slovakia, Judge Rami Abraham from France, Judge Mohamed Benouna from Morocco, Judge Antonio Augusto Cansado Trindade from Brazil, Judge John Donahue from the United States, Judge Giorgio Chaffa from Italy, Judge Julia Sebutinde from Uganda, Judge Dalveer Bhandari from India, Judge Patrick Lipton Robinson from Jamaica, Judge James Richard Crawford from Australia, Judge Kirill Gaborgian from the Russian Federation, Judge Nawaf Salam from Lebanon, and Judge Yuji Iwasawa from Japan. They take in the entire world. Of the cases I've read about, the pending and current cases, the most interesting to me was this one about this river that runs between Bolivia and Chile. This is unbelievable and also so predictable. Okay, this is from, this is a press release from the Hague's communication office there from June 2016. Today, the Republic of Chile instituted proceedings against the state of Bolivia before the International Court of Justice, the principal judicial organ of the United Nations, with regard to a dispute concerning the status and use of the waters of the Silala. That's a river. Chile argues that the Silala originates from groundwater springs in Bolivian territory at a few kilometers northeast of the Chile-Bolivia international boundary. The Silala then flows across the border into Chilean territory, where it receives additional waters from various springs before it reaches the Enacaliri River. According to Chile, the total length of this very, very important river is about 8.5 kilometers. Of this distance, approximately 3.8 kilometers are located on Bolivian territory and 4.7 kilometers in Chilean territory. Chile also states that the waters of the Silala River have historically, and for more than a century, been used in Chile for different purposes, including the provision of water supply to the city of Antofagasta and the towns of Sierra Gorda and Vacandonga. Chile explains that the nature of the Silala River as an international watercourse was never disputed until Bolivia, for the first time in 1999, claimed its waters as exclusively Bolivian. Chile contends that it has always been willing to engage in discussions with Bolivia concerning the regime of utilization of the waters of the Silala. However, these discussions were unsuccessful due to Bolivia's insistence on denying that the Silala River is an international watercourse and Bolivia's contention that it has rights to 100% use of its waters. So this seems so straightforward to me and also so familiar because I hear these same arguments or similar arguments between my daughters. And they're just very familiar. And the idea of the problems going on, as our Chinese poet said, everything is so familiar, on and on and on, over and over. So this waterway, this disputed waterway, Chile has one side, and reading this here, it seems so straightforward, but we can be absolutely certain that Bolivia has a different perspective on it. Chile requests the court to adjudge and declare that the Silala River system, together with the subterranean portions of its system, is an international watercourse, the use of which is governed by customary international law. Chile is entitled to the equitable and reasonable use of the waters of the Silala River system in accordance with customary international law, and that under the standard of equitable and reasonable utilization, Chile is entitled to its current use of the waters of the Silala River. So they're fighting about how to handle it right now and into the future. They need a decisive judgment that will settle now and going forward. Almost the exact same thing is happening with the river in Georgia and Tennessee, where I grew up. Tennessee's a little bit north of Georgia, and a river originates there in the mountains and flows down into a reservoir near Atlanta, which really needs and wants that for drinking water. And Tennessee is disputing Atlanta's use of the water. And you know, we've been hearing for many decades, since I was a child, how water would be the oil of our century, that that's where the battles are going to be. It's interesting to see it playing out in real time. Another case, this was filed in September of 2018, a year ago. The State of Palestine institutes proceedings against the United States of America. The State of Palestine today instituted proceedings against the United States of America before the International Court of Justice, the principal judicial organ of the United Nations, with respect to a dispute concerning alleged violations of the Vienna Convention on Diplomatic Relations of April 18, 1961. It is recalled that on December 6, 2017, the President of the United States recognized Jerusalem as the capital of Israel and announced the relocation of the American Embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. The American Embassy in Jerusalem was then inaugurated in May of 2018. Palestine contends that it flows from the Vienna Convention that the diplomatic mission of a sending state, that's a country in the UN, of a sending country, must be established on the territory of the receiving country. According to Palestine, in view of the special status of Jerusalem, the relocation of the United States Embassy in Israel to Jerusalem constitutes a breach of the Vienna Convention. And I want to draw your attention to the phrasing here. It doesn't say in 2017 Donald Trump moved the embassy. It says the President of the United States, implying a role that is permanent and consistent regardless of who it's filled by. And such a poignant reminder of why elections matter so much. Because the names come and go, but the actions done by the people in those roles can persist. So there's a certain, not anonymity, but a certain facelessness with such important roles. And we need to really be so mindful of holding those people accountable of the roles they fill in our world. Now, as you know, it's UN Sunday, and our congregation's envoy to the Unitarian Universalist United Nations organization in New York, which is our denomination's link to the UN. And Jane, my younger daughter, is our youth envoy. So many people in our church are members of the UNO, and I want to remind you that it's time, now that it's fall, to renew membership if you're interested. And our dues last year supported, besides supporting the UNO office in New York, supported girls' education in Ghana. I haven't heard yet what the 2019-2020 dues will be funding this year, but when I find out what particular project or area they're going to, I will let you know. Please don't feel obligated to support the UNO, even if you've done so in the past. But if you would like to, you can put a check in the offering plate anytime in the next month or two. Okay. Thank you so much. And please do consider if you want to be a member of our UNO.